When a mama bear's lap slowly disappears, she has some special news to tell her little dears.
At least this one rhymes.
I have feelings already.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we're jumping back in time a little bit. 1 week, exactly, because last week we covered the Berenstain Bears and Baby Makes Five, which introduced us to Honey Bear, but we skipped the book that dealt with the imminent arrival of Honey Bear, the birds and the bees, and the Berenstain Bears from 2000. And the reason I skipped it was because I'm not qualified to talk about this. I mean, I have two kids, but I'm not qualified to talk about what this book is about, as I am not qualified to talk about most of the books in this series, but this one in particular, because this one deals specifically with discussing pregnancy, all things pre-baby with a young child. And while I have two children and I have certainly discussed these types of things with them, I wouldn't use me as an example for anything. So to combat my own ignorance and provide us with some actual insight, I have come to the Family Tree Clinic in St. Paul, Minnesota, an organization that I'm familiar with because when I took ECFE classes with our last guest, Annette Gagliardi, a representative from this clinic came to teach the sex education portion of that class several times while I was there, and I was just blown away by how amazing this organization worked and what they taught. And so I would like to welcome to the show this week the health education director of the Family Tree Clinic, Lindsay Hoskins. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about the Family Tree Clinic.
Yeah, so we're a sexual and reproductive health clinic. We're a community clinic, so we operate on a sliding fee scale, and we provide all kinds of sexual health services, and we have a large education department. So we do lots and lots and lots of visiting schools, out of school locations where young people are, and then we teach lots of adults as well. So, for example, the class that you had in your ECFE, we do hundreds of those every year. It's really an exciting part of our work because we get to go help parents figure out how to like roll this out in a way that's really comfortable so they can talk about sexuality and sexual development and healthy stuff with their kids in a way that just feels like easy and true to their values and helps support healthy sexual development for children lifelong rather than kind of waiting till they're 13 to
right.
talk about it, like getting it moving when they're infants.
How has this kind of education changed like over the years?
That's a good question. Well, I've been doing this for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that the major changes that I've seen in my time is that lately we are talking a lot more about gender. We're talking a lot more about consent, and we're talking a lot more about sexuality from like a what is healthy perspective rather than just like what you shouldn't do. Mm. So those have been kind of the recent changes. But over the past 50 years or 100 years, there have been humongous changes. And in this book, I think there's actually this book has a lot of good stuff going for it, but I feel like we have come so far since the writing of this book mm-hmm. to being more proactive about talking with young people about sex.
It's interesting because a lot of just what you said just now ties in with I interviewed Jason Buckland for the Berenstain Bears and The Bully. And it's interesting how much this type of education, teaching kids about to respect their own bodies and their own identities, all ties in with how kids interact with each other, the climate that we create amongst children. I just find it fascinating just how this all ties in.
Yeah.
It's all about like health.
It really is. And it's anti-shame because
mm-hmm.
bullying just comes out of shame.
Yeah.
And sexual health issues and relationship problems and self-esteem, it's all tied to shame. And we carry so much shame with us. And when we're teaching those classes that you mentioned, where we visit the early childhood family education sites, one of the main things I hear from parents is, I want my kid to grow up without all the shame that I've been carrying my whole life.
Yeah.
How can I help my child avoid all of this shame? So
that's fantastic.
The root.
That's a great goal.
Yeah, it is. It is. It feels good to be able to talk about that with people.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Berenstain Bears. Now, do you have any history with the Bears?
Oh, loved them as a child. Absolutely loved them. Thought these books were the coolest, for sure.
And you were talking a little bit before we started about your mom's opinions about the Berenstain Bears.
Yep. I was talking with my mom this morning, telling her I was going to be doing this afternoon. And she said, oh, the Berenstain Bear books were revolutionary because they were the only books available in, I was born in 1980. So they were the only books available at that time that really dug into issues and feelings and how to talk about like family issues with young children. So they depended on them heavily and really valued their presence.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because in this book in particular, several of these first-time books almost serve more as handbooks for parents than they do storybooks for children.
Yep. Like, I think a lot of books that are still that way.
Yeah.
A lot of the books for young children about sexuality stuff, it's like, hey, parents, poke, poke, this is what you should be talking about. And parents, I think, really appreciate that.
Yeah. So let's talk about this book, The Birds, the Bees, and the Berenstain Bears. Right off the bat, we're in a little bit of a switcheroo because I think this is the first-time book that inverts the placement of the Berenstain Bears name. Usually it's the Berenstain Bears and something. This prioritizes the birds and the bees, mm-hmm. which is an old phrase that we don't really use anymore.
It's a very old phrase, and it's funny that we rely so heavily on birds and bees, and in this book they even talk about flowers and trees. It's like, that's not helpful for young people. Young people find that very confusing when you're talking about farm animals and how they reproduce.
Or like, right.
I guess we'll talk about it later, but like explaining the reproduction of flowers, not helpful.
I mean, I guess it's supposed to be reassuring to kids that everything reproduces,
mm-hmm.
like that's normal, but
yep.
I can't understand. I don't really get, I mean, I don't even understand how we tied the birds and the bees into it into the first, my parents didn't use that phrase, so.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Yep.
So let's look at the story. Mm-hmm. So what's going on in this book?
Okay. So it kind of starts out with talking about Sister Bear and all of the, it's basically like Sister Bear's a big girl and she can do all these things. She can jump rope and she can ride her bike.
Yeah.
And then she's a curious kid and she wonders about why the wind blows then she goes and sits with her mom to read a book and notices that mom's lap is getting smaller.
Now, this is imagery that they used in the Berenstain Bear's New Baby, the book where Sister was born.
Mm.
Brother Bear noticed that Mama's lap was getting smaller. He was small bear at the time, but he noticed that Mama Bear's lap was getting smaller and smaller. Of course, in that book, they didn't explain to him that Mama Bear was going to have a baby until the day she had a baby. And Papa took Brother Bear out into the woods, and when they came home, Mama Bear had a baby.
Whoa, gosh.
Because they're bears, and they live down the wilderness, and they didn't have doulas or anyone. Like, it was just there.
Bear doulas? Just a raccoon doula who comes to visit?
Papa takes the kid out of the house. Mama's left on her own.
You know, I read that book years ago, and that has stuck in my mind as just like an epically bad Babies Are Coming book. But I was talking about that with my mom this morning, and she said, but you know what? That's what happened in real life in those days, is you didn't know your mom was pregnant. And then there would just be a baby.
Yeah.
Which is true, that's what really happened. So it's wild.
Plus, that book was more, I guess, we talked about this last week, was more focused on reassuring Brother that he wasn't, that his place in the family was secure.
Mm-hmm.
That he wasn't being replaced by a new baby. Mm-hmm. It just fudged a lot of the details.
Yeah.
Because I think even in 1979, we were pretty well along with people not abandoning the new mother as
mm-hmm.
she, yeah. Well, Sister has noticed that Mama's lap is getting smaller.
Yes. So, so Mom asks, do you have a guess why my lap is getting smaller? And Sister's like, is it because you're eating too much? And the mom's like, no, I hope not. To which I'm like, ahem. There's some changes I would suggest in the body positivity take of this book.
Well, it's also interesting because I just I have a podcast where we cover Beverly Cleary books as well, and we just read we just covered the other day Ramona Forever, in which her mother gets pregnant, And that book was came out in 83. And there was a lot of emphasis in one part on the mother making sure she doesn't eat too much.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't gain weight. She does not want to gain weight. That's bad for a pregnant woman to eat too much.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I vaguely remember that. Like, that was always emphasized in popular culture.
That is still a thing.
Is it?
That is still very much a thing. Wow. That is reinforced, like, through the medical industry too, like, you should not gain more than 25 to 35 pounds. What?
Yeah, right. You're in a situation where it's so hard to find something your body wants
it's
you to
like
eat anyway.
Out of your control, yeah. Honestly, very much out of your control. So I think that we've got some very old body shaming issues in this society. And when Berenstain Bears write a Berenstain Bears and Body Shame Fat Liberation book, I'll be excited to talk about it.
I'll talk to Mike.
However, it does make sense that what sister's noticing is, hey, your lap is smaller.
Right.
You know, like, that's the way that this is impacting at this time.
Right.
That makes total sense. And they do that a lot in this book. I think they kind of, you're getting the piece that sister would be aware of.
Yes. So then they change the subject.
Yeah. So, the mom tells her right away, no, I'm not. It's not that she's getting bigger. It's not that she's getting fatter from eating too much food. It's that she's going to have a baby. And then they say this line that they say over and over in this book, sister could accept that, which I think is interesting.
Yes. This sets up sort of the pattern in this book,
yeah.
Which is sister will ask a question and mama will give her just enough information. And then sister will be like,
Yeah.
And then we go on to the next day.
She could accept that. It kind of says over and over again. That is definitely a pattern in this book. And that's one of the things that I would want to talk about as a sex educator. I would really recommend, like, taking opportunities to dig deeper into questions rather than just giving the barest answer and then moving on.
Is this because it's so deliberately done, and this is kind of out of the typical Berenstain Bears sort of story pattern where it's just like, it's a story and they learn some lessons along the way. Because this is set up very much as sister asks a question, mother addresses it, sister thinks about it, they move on. I'm wondering if this was, I mean, it seems almost like they consulted with someone.
It does.
Who was like, this is how you talk to kids about this.
Mm-hmm.
So was this ever an approach?
I mean, some of the books that we have, written by the experts 20 years ago, I don't feel like they've changed their tone much since then. Uh-huh. I think that even then they were like, yes, you should answer the questions and you should say more. And the mother does answer the questions here. It's just, it's a really common thing that parents want to do, kind of like put this to rest and then move on. And parents are often talking about, like, how, oh, they're relieved because they dodged the bullet. The kid brought up a question and they were able to change the subject fast enough. So I really respect in this book that the mother does provide information,
yes,
rather than just straight up being like, oh, look, there's a frog, and distracting sister from talking about it.
Right, because there is is there also the possibility of providing a child with too much information that they weren't actually seeking?
Common question. Not really. People worry way too much about telling too much too soon. They're very concerned that they're going to scar their kid for life. When adults say they were scarred for life when they learned about sex, it's because they learned about it too late. It's because they learned about it when it was far beyond when they should have. And they have then soaked up so much of the kind of the just the cultural shame that's in the atmosphere around sex and sexuality and bodies and body functions that then learning about that becomes very upsetting. Whereas when you learn about it when you're really, really little, it doesn't matter. It's just like, oh, whatever. I just learned one more of a billion things I'm going to learn today. And it just kind of blends right in with everything else.
I guess I was more thinking, like, if a child asks where do babies come from and you say, and you start getting very, like, extremely, like, overly clinical, like, using words and concepts that are, like, above their, like, pay grade. not so much, like, inappropriate, like anything that might be inappropriate, but more like just I just wanted to know, like, the
so it's gonna be boring just like it would be if you were reading a child a book that's a little bit older than they're ready for, and it doesn't have enough pictures and has too many words. And they're going to want to like turn those pages and get done with the book so they can just be done and go on to a book they like better. That would happen in your conversation too. You're giving too much information and their eyes glaze over and they're just waiting for you to be done talking, but you're not doing any harm in that moment. And what you are doing is giving yourself a little practice with saying these things that you might not know how to say. And they're also getting used to hearing the words, you know, whether it's like, you know, uterus or sperm or whatever. And that way, those words are words they've just always heard. And they just know that this is a conversation. This is a pattern that can happen. This conversation can happen and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So it's totally fine to say more than you think they're ready to understand, because they're not going to remember it or care.
Oh, I see.
Just like if you try to teach them about germs earlier than they are able to understand the concept of germs, they're not scarred for life.
Right.
They're just kind of bored and not listening. And meanwhile, you get to practice a little bit.
And I'm used to my kids being bored and not listening.
Yeah, so right? That happens all the time anyway.
That's just part of being a parent.
We're way more likely to tell too little too late than too much too soon. And so I think we over police ourselves.
Yeah.
We're like too heavily cautious on that. And then the secrecy builds up and that becomes palpable. And then shame kicks in. So
I see.
Yeah.
So the next question sister has is, when are you going to have a baby? And also, mama goes into where the baby is right now. And they keep using the term baby.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that?
I think families can choose the word that works for them.
Okay.
I don't think that most families call their baby a fetus or anything. They might, you know, if families know the sex of the baby, they might start calling it a brother or a sister or whatever earlier on. I really feel like most families probably say baby still.
Okay.
And that's fine. The one term that comes up all the time and they say here is that it's growing in a special place. The uterus is always called such a special, it's a special place in mommy's body, always, in all books. And they often call it a womb, and that happens in this book too. They don't say uterus, they say womb.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I would suggest then, as a parent, to add in, or the uterus.
Right.
Call it that too. Get these medical terms just also normalized.
Well, it's interesting because she says womb, and the first thing that happens is sister misunderstands her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, just call it, if you just call it the uterus, there's not really anything else that sounds like that.
I know. Although my now 6-year-old used to call it a unicorn.
Well.
And my 2-year-old calls it a utilis, but that's close. She's getting there. So it's a special place that mamas have where babies can grow, and sister could accept that.
Yes. She could.
She could.
Here we go. Well, here we go with the big question that I remember I had for my mom, because this one confused the heck out of me as a child, is how does the baby get out?
Yeah. So in this one, the mom does an interesting thing, which I think is really common for parents to do, which is a delay tactic.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, well, I'm going to the doctor. Why don't you come along and ask the doctor? The doctor's really good at asking questions. So I think it's an excellent way to handle a moment where somebody's very uncomfortable. Like that mom doesn't know how to say what's going to happen, but she's not saying we're not going to talk about it. She's saying like, okay, let's figure it out together. Or here's a way we can learn about it. And sometimes for parents in real life, that's let's read this book that explains it together. Or sometimes it's, you know, you might have a friend you could, let's talk to Aunt whoever who just had a baby. Or maybe it's, that's a good question. And I'm not sure how to explain it. Let me think about it for a little while. But then don't leave the kid hanging.
Right.
Come back and really do talk about it. So it's really cool, I think, that the mom brought Sister Bear with to the doctor.
She could also be saying, that's a great question. But you know what? Brother doesn't want to hear about this again. And he's right here in the room. and he already got this talk. And he's just enjoying putting his model airplane together. So we'll take you to Dr. Gertz. Because if there's one thing that... And he says, like, I went through this already when you were born, which he didn't. We know he didn't.
Yeah, but, he sure didn't.
But it's a little retconning they did. But throughout this book and the next book, this is what Brother does. He works on his model airplanes, and he takes a complete disinterest in everything around him.
Yeah.
Like, Mama doesn't take brother's like education into consideration in this, because he's older than sister, but he's not much older.
Well, and older siblings still care about the new sibling they're gonna have.
Right.
This is just reinforcing that gender stereotype that boys don't care about girl stuff.
Yeah.
And like having a baby is a girl thing. Having a vagina is woman's business.
Right.
Not like overall human health and family interest.
Right.
So that's a little irritating.
Yeah, it is funny that like I mean, she does, you know, sister says, brother, would you like to come along? But it's mostly as a setup to a joke. And but sister could still accept it.
Sister could accept it. I feel like brother's a little traumatized that he didn't have any information right. about Sister Bear coming, and he's like dissociating.
Yeah. He's like, I had to learn about this from Too Tall. That was a bad education. And also, sister is playing with her own babies,
mm-hmm.
which we will take note once again for the several book in a row. They are human babies, which we don't understand.
Oh, funny.
Because humans don't exist in the bear world.
Didn't notice that. it's just a bear fantasy, this creature that looks like that.
I guess. So they meet up with Dr. Gert Grizzly, who is a familiar character to us. She is the family physician in Bear Town. She is one of the leading authority figures. We learn from the chapter books that she runs the entire hospital in Bear Country. She's also a boss. She is in charge of their fundraising. She is in charge of supervising the building of the new wings. Dr. Gert Grizzly is the ultimate, probably the most competent bear in Bear Country.
Yeah.
So she's a good person to have as an educator.
I would let her catch my babies.
It is interesting. I mean, it's not surprising, but this book is just another book that does present it as when you have a baby, you go to the hospital and a doctor delivers the baby.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other, like, there's no, some people do have their babies at home. You know, some people don't use a doctor. Some people, you know, they have, there's many different options. So if your family doesn't fall into this pattern, books like these are kind of a little...
Yeah, it's really hard to find a book that talks about all the different ways that babies can be born or all the different ways that babies can be conceived.
Right.
That's pretty rare book. And this one, too, is like a mama has a uterus, a mm-hmm. womb. A mama has a womb. And they don't talk about daddy sperm at all
no,
in this
they
book.
Don't.
But if a book is going to talk about that, it's like a man and a woman. They're usually white.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a bed with heart bubbles floating over their heads. And they conceive a baby that way.
Right.
And it's like a baby is born into a loving family of a white mom and white dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that is only one of the ways the babies are made.
Well, yes, like one of our family friends whose kids play with our youngest a lot, like every week, she had both of her two younger children at home in front of her other kids.
Mm-hmm.
The midwife was there. She had her babies in a pool in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a family affair. It was a
yep.
family event. And there's photos and there are, you know, they were celebratory things sent out to people. Like it was very different than what the Berenstain Bears present as normal for a childbirth. And I suppose in the year 2000, we were still like, everything was still very like clinical. And I would say that like I'm more apt to see information now about the various options
mm-hmm.
in popular culture than I was when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have a long, long, long way to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, we really
addressing
do.
That because, I mean...
And most kids, most babies around the world are born at home in front of the whole family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just...
So our books today really tend to over-medicalize it and kind of overemphasize the doctor's role in the whole process, actually.
Yeah.
And mom does a lot more work than the doctor does.
Right.
And, like, not to mention just, like, the gender dynamics, an assumption that it's always, like, a woman who's giving birth. Like,
mm-hmm.
lots of transgender people have babies.
Yeah.
All the time, every day. All around the world. And that's like, you don't see that in a book.
Nope.
Yeah.
Certainly not in Berenstain Bears.
Yeah.
Birds, Bees, Berenstain Bears. That would have shaken up the publishing industry.
It would have been very exciting and really validating to a lot of real humans
yep.
who needed to see that book and that story. Yeah. There are some books, some excellent books by an author named Corey Silverberg
mm-hmm.
that are a gender inclusive look at pregnancy, birth, puberty, growing up stuff. So. Thumbs up to those if parents
yes.
listening are looking for recommendations.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, because we're always looking for ways to expand beyond
mm-hmm.
what the bears chose to tell us.
Yeah.
So she does go to Dr. Gert, She changes into her gown. They use special machines to look inside her.
Yeah, they call it an X-ray machine. But then on the next page, they do say ultrasound. And the sister gets to watch the ultrasound, which is pretty cool. The sister's like, okay, it doesn't look very much like a baby to me. Which it doesn't. But it's like cool that she's being involved in the process in that way.
Yeah. And it's cool that they're showing that this is a thing growing inside a body. Like there is,
yeah,
it's not a mystery what's mm-hmm. happening. Like we can explain this to you. It's not just sort of left up to like, you know, just imagine what's no,
exactly.
Here's imagery. Like we can show this to you.
That's a good point. And also that it's not like a medical emergency. So much of media representation of pregnancies is like, emergency, rush to the hospital, somebody's water broke, oh my gosh. And it's really just like the doctor saying, good, fine, excellent, like this is supposed to happen, everything's okay.
Yeah. So she finally asks Dr. Gert, how does the baby get out?
They fall a little short here. Mm-hmm. So the doctor says that the baby comes down through a part of the mama's body called the birth canal. Sister could accept that. She couldn't picture it, but she could accept it. And I'm just like, that's not helpful if you can't picture it.
I know why she can't picture it.
Because nobody says birth canal.
Well, also it's like, so how do I get to Cub Foods from here? You go down this street. Wait, but I don't know what, there's more to it. Like, I assume that like the street is involved, but.
Yeah. Nope, a birth canal is an evasive term. It does not tell you what's real. So as a parent reading this book, I would say, called the vagina. Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you know that the vagina is a tube and it's really stretchy and it can open up and a baby can come out of there? And sometimes babies are also born with a surgery called a C-section mm-hmm. or cesarean. You know, like I would add, this is great. And I would say more because
right.
we want kids to not just be like confused enough to stop paying attention. I want them to like really actually understand that stuff.
It's funny because it says sister couldn't quite picture it. And I'm like, if she can't quite picture it, you haven't properly explained it.
Yeah. Like,
and I would hope that like this look that they have drawn on her face. It's enough of a clue to Dr. Gert Grizzly.
She looks pretty shocked and a little disturbed. She does. But yeah, she hasn't actually gotten any information right. out of that. So a tip for handling that type of question. Take a deep breath. Smile. And say like, well, what do you think? To get a little sense of like, what does the kid already know? What do they understand? What's in their mind? Maybe they have an idea. If they don't, then it's okay to go ahead and tell them. You know, you can just like say it for real, like I just did earlier, like, oh yeah, the vagina is able to stretch open. Sometimes it's called the birth canal, and it's a tube that babies can squeeze through. And then afterwards check in and say like, does that make sense? Like, do you have more questions? What do you think about that? And that gives you an opportunity to kind of clarify, and also to like talk about your values if it's a values-laden question. Like, here's the direct answer. Here's the real deal. And what do you think about that? How does that make you feel? And then you get to share your feelings and they get to share their feelings, and you get to practice having a conversation rather than just like a evasive maneuver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those things that really confused me as a kid because it wasn't explained to me until a little later. I mean, I wasn't like a preteen or anything. I was still a child, but I had seen photos of myself being born.
Mm.
Like someone was in the room taking Polaroids and there's a shot of my mother laying on the hospital bed. There's my dad with the because everyone was done up in surgical masks.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I knew, there's like a picture of me being held up squalling. And there was no in between. Like I was like, I kind of had to piece it together. So one day I went up to my mom and I was like, so dad cut me out of you? And my mom was like, what? And I was like, he cut me out of you? And she was like, no, that's not how it works. And that's when she explained, like, you came out, there's a passageway between my legs and you came out. And I was like, I don't understand this at all. Like,
yeah.
I was like, it doesn't make any sense. I don't see how that works, but you're my mom and I trust you. And
you accepted that.
I accepted that. That was enough for me at that moment. I just sort of like, I'm good. And I'm good. But I got more information than sister got. Now we get to the metaphorical part of the book.
Yeah, they're walking home through the meadow. It's a beautiful day, and there's a pair of robins feeding their babies and a baby bunny hopping around. And on the next page, there's a pregnant deer and a big buck with huge antlers standing proudly next to her. And do you think that maybe she's pregnant too? So, okay, they're animals. They live in an animal world. Mm-hmm. All right. And I do think that there is something, and I do this with my own children too, oh, look, those bugs are having sex. Those bugs are making babies right now. Yeah. Did you see that squirrel just is trying to have sex with that other squirrel? That this is a normal thing that all beings are doing. However, using it as just purely a metaphor, how are babies made? Well, when a mommy bunny and a daddy bunny want to make a baby, you just need to talk about humans when kids are asking questions.
Right.
So there can be value in talking about birds and bees. The flower part, after you've really laid a very solid foundation about human and animal reproduction, then maybe expand on that a little.
Right, because your kids aren't asking about botany, and that's really what this is.
There's male flowers and female flowers, and well, that's a stretch.
But it involves the bees as well, visiting the flowers, yeah. And there's no equivalent in.
No.
I mean, I guess if your child is being born, if you're.
That's a complicated metaphor.
If you are using medical intervention in order to have a child, and the doctor could be a bee, that's, I guess that could be how
you
it
can
works.
Write that children's book.
So yes, yeah, so we go. We spend more time on the bees and the flowers than we do on how do babies come out of the human body. So.
We certainly do, and there is nothing about how babies get in the human body. The fertilization of there's no sperm egg. There's no nothing about that portion.
As far as we know, the first job Papa has had in this whole business is driving Mama to the hospital.
Yeah, very important job, not to be underestimated.
No, but
there were earlier steps. But it is common for kids to wonder about a piece of the story and not the whole thing. Sometimes when parents think about how am I going to explain reproduction to my child, they get worried because they're thinking this means so much, and they start out with when two people love each other very much,
right.
And that's actually not what the kids are asking about. Mm-hmm. You're talking about relationship dynamics and other kind of values. And they're really talking about specific actions. So you can speak to the specific thing. Is it how the baby's getting out? Is it how it's getting in? Is it how does it breathe in there? Is it, what's my life going to be like after the baby's born? Is it why are you having a baby? Why did you choose to destroy my life this way? Which piece of the puzzle are the kids asking about?
One more anecdote. When I was very young, I was riding in the car with my mom, front seat, because that's how we used to do it back in the day. She was driving me somewhere. I was a very small child, and the thought occurred to me, I didn't know how babies were made. I didn't know what process, if there even was a process. So in my mind, there was something that happened when two people came together, some sort of magical chemistry must happen that created a baby. And so I asked my mom, out of the blue, she's driving, and I say, do a man and a woman have to be married to have a baby? Thinking, is the process of marriage some kind of magical ritual that produces the chemicals? That was what was on my head. But I ask it, do a man and a woman have to be married to have a baby? There's this long pause, and my mom just goes, yes. And I was all, my suspicions are confirmed. It's some sort of magical process. She did not take that opportunity to have a learning moment with me.
Just imagine what was racing through her head in that moment.
She's like, I'm just driving you to this door.
When we told our then three-year-old, I guess, that we were pregnant, she threw her arms around our necks and said, oh, I'm so proud of you. You two figured out how to put your private parts together. She was just delighted. She knew we'd been trying for a little while, and I think she imagined that we just couldn't figure out.
Couldn't figure it out.
Just couldn't.
I mean, there's books. Guess there's people you can talk to. That's great.
Yep, it was pretty good. They do talk a little bit about I feel at this point when they're kind of getting past the there's a whole page about pollen and male and female trees. But once they get past that, at some point they start talking about is it a girl or a boy? And then there's the just all of that very real discussion that siblings witness all of the time that everybody who walks past you in the grocery store is, oh, are you having a little brother or a little sister? And it's just all of this expectation of what the sex of this baby is going to mean for you.
Right.
Like, that tells you who the baby is going to be. And in our family, our three-year-old would say, or transgender to every single person who said, is it going to be a boy or a girl? Or transgender. It was great to see just adult after adult after adult be like taken aback by, how does this young child know about that? Or I don't even know about that. Right. Or yeah. So I feel like these days I'm hearing from parents all of the time. One of the biggest themes I'm hearing from parents is about like kind of disrupting that assumption about like what gender is going to mean, what sex is going to mean for a baby.
What's interesting too is that that's something that only became a thing really once ultrasounds were a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once they became standard.
Yeah.
Because once upon a time, it was just guesswork. It was just, well, I was probably one or the other, but who knows? Like, that's as far as you can go. There's some folk processes you can use to try to like spin a dime over your belly, but that's it. Like, and then all of a sudden there was this medical magic wand that was like, let's take a look at what's going on in right here. And then it became this, then you were expected to know.
Yep.
We decided not to find out with my youngest. We had all these different names picked out, and that was pretty much it. We were like, we'll just find out when she arrives. And even when she arrived, they were like, would you like to see, like, the midwife was like, would you like to take a look? And would you like to, I can't remember how she phrased it. She was like, would you like to something the baby? Like,
yeah.
Say what it is. And I looked down, and it was just this mess. I was like, it's just, there's gunk and and tubes and umbilical cords. And I was like, I think I said, is it a boy? She's all, look again. I was like, all right, you know, it's not a really good time. I'm not very observant right now.
Yeah, we didn't find out for either of our children. And I remember that at the time of birth, it was the least thing I cared about. Mm-hmm. I just was like, I don't even need to know. Like, I just want to hold this baby.
Yeah. Yeah. It's at the end of the day, that's what it is.
It's really interesting what the effect that ultrasounds have on, like, really, I mean, the development of that fetus pre-birth, and then the world that fetus is, that baby is born into, is just so set with so many expectations, and just immediately it's amazing.
People want to know, what kind of onesie should I buy?
Is how sexual development is happening before we're born.
Yeah. Do I buy you the onesie that says Daddy's Little Princess, or do I buy you the blue one that says Chick Magnet on it?
Yeah.
Boy, that was a popular one about 10 years ago. Chick Magnet. We were just like, what is happening in this world?
What is happening? So in the book, from the experience of what sister would be feeling or noticing, they go to the hospital and a babysitter comes over. So, you know, we don't really know what's happening at the hospital. She's just with a babysitter. And then the phone rings to say the baby's come. And the sister's like, is it a girl or a boy? But Papa doesn't say. He just hangs up. He's excited. And the babysitter says, well, the important thing is that they're both doing just fine. Sure, that was important, but other things were important too. Like, was it a boy or a girl? The sister really wants to know.
Uh-huh.
And then in that paragraph, she's saying, like, she wants a sister so she can play dolls. And the brother wants a brother because he wants to play airplanes. So just a little more of that gender reinforcement.
There's a book right there in that paragraph.
Yep.
The Berenstain Bears and determining our child's
personality based on their genitals. And then it winds up in the way that a lot of, I think, like, new baby is coming books do. Like, the baby is not going to be able to do anything for a while. You can ride bikes and you can climb trees and the stuff we were talking about at the beginning of the book. Like, sister's a big bear who can do these things. And baby's just going to wiggle and pee and maybe hold your finger, and someday we'll be able to do the things that you can do. And sister can accept that.
Although I will say, this baby is remarkably alert and in control of its body for a baby that literally arrived in the world.
Well, it's a bear. Bears are born a little farther advanced than we are. And then the last page. And Mama got her lap back. Body after baby. Mama snapped right back into shape.
You sit up in that chair. You throw that kid on your lap.
That's the one where I'm like, Mama's lap. The size of Mama's lap is not important. That gets me. That gets me in a little frustration spot.
Because as soon as that baby comes out, your body returns to the same exact condition it was in before any of this started. And that happens that day.
Yeah. But also from sister's perspective, being able to sit on her mommy's lap would be the thing she would notice, you know, like, how has my relationship to my mother changed?
Right.
In this moment, I can get back on her lap.
Of course, in truth, like, mother may not be in any condition to have you sit on her lap.
No kidding.
Like, she may be like, let's wait on that a little bit.
Very true.
But that's and that's it. The baby is only referred to as it. Mm-hmm. At the end of this book, there is no gender. There is no.
They never do say a gender.
No, because. This book, if I am not mistaken, there was some sort of contest to name the baby amongst readers. I believe that's what happened. And of course, it ended up being named Honey and ended up being a little girl, further cementing the Berenstain Bears as kind of a low-key Simpsons, even though they were first. As the characters and the canon expanded, this book series became more and more like Springfield, with your incompetent mayor and your local swindler and your teachers and your bullies. And now with Baby Makes Five, you've got the infant that will never age, because Honey Bear is still a little toddler who can barely utter a word or two.
Yep.
So Lindsay, the birds, the bees, and the Berenstain Bears. What are your final thoughts on it?
I would read it to my kids, but I would talk a lot more about all of the things. But my kids are pretty used to that.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what we always have to do.
It's definitely what we call on the show, we call a conversation starter.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to leave it at this.
I would not leave it at that.
But your kids are probably going to have some questions after it anyway.
I think if your kids love Berenstain Bears and are like, let's read this book, I would say, okay. But if I were looking for a book on how to teach my kids about where babies come from, this would not be the book I would choose.
Yeah. Do you have any recommendations for books you would choose?
Oh, absolutely. So it's tough because there's never one that's perfect. Everyone kind of shines in one way and then falters in another way. But I mentioned earlier the author Corey Silverberg. So they have a book, What Makes a Baby, which is about sperm, eggs, and uteruses. It's like, some people have sperm, some people have eggs, some people have uteruses, and it's removed from gendered bodies. And so it works for everybody, because no matter what your family situation is, if it was adopted, if it was donor egg, if it's transgender parents, if it's like cisgender man and woman with hearts above their heads conception, you know, like classic child story that you hear in all the books, no matter who your family is, that book works. Everybody's really from a sperm and egg and a uterus. And it's a lovely book, but it's also pretty nonspecific. So I think that a kid could read that book and not really understand what happens. So I would pair that book with another one, which is called It's Not the Stork, and it's by Roby Harris, and it's very comprehensive. It has tons and tons and tons of information in it. It's probably not a book you'd sit down and read from cover to cover. It's more like you'd probably read a few pages at a time, because there's just tons of info in there, but it kind of covers everything, but it's not gender inclusive. So I really feel like both of them together are the recipe.
Is It's Not the Stork the one that's... Is that the one that's divided into like three tracks for different?
There's different ages. It's Not the Stork for, it says ages 4 and up. It's fine for younger kids too. They'd just be probably a little bored by it. They'd like some pages.
Because that author wrote.
Then It's So Amazing.
That's right. That's
I think
right.
is ages 6 and up. And then It's Perfectly Normal is 10.
And that deals
up.
More and with more like body puberty. Changing and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are good series of books.
They are. They're very good. Their artwork is wonderful. Very inclusive of body differences. So whether it's like ability, size, shape, race, I mean, there's like people with cellulite and people with canes and people like not just like a five white kids and like one person of color. It's like really inclusive artwork throughout the whole book, but it over and over again reinforces baby boys, boys and men have penises and that's what makes them boys.
Right.
And likewise for girls. And so it's just like hits over the hammer, over the head with a hammer repeatedly that gender is biological and not part of your identity.
Right. I'm curious to see if that series updates itself in that way.
Well, they updated a couple years ago.
Oh, did they?
And they didn't change that, which makes me feel like they're not going to, which is really frustrating for me, actually, because we like that book in all other ways but that. And so it just feels really frustrating that they didn't kind of grow when they had the opportunity. However, Corey Silverberg also has a puberty-aged book, which is called Sex is a Funny Word, and it's delightful. It's a little less about, like, the nuts and bolts of how babies are made and, like, the physical puberty changes. There's a little bit of that in there, but it's more about, like, identity and, like, what is all this sex stuff that people are talking about? And, like, who am I? And why do I have a crush on somebody? And it's great.
Wow.
Super inclusive gender and ability and race and everything. So great, great book.
Fantastic. Well, this book, The Birds, the Bees, and the Berenstain Bears from 2000, it was never adapted into an episode of the TV show for reasons I can imagine introducing a whole new character. As far as like a Berenstain Bears book goes, it is nicely illustrated. There's a lot of attention to detail. There's a lot of birds and bees imagery around the sides, just
there
so
is.
You never
like a
forget
framework of birds and bees.
Yep. It's a little more lavishly illustrated than some of the other books from this era. I think they were really trying to, especially the more pastoral scenes, I think they were really trying to make this look as non-threatening as possible. So it's very colorful. It's very soft with a very soft color palette, but it's sister oriented. And I always like sister oriented books because they give her some great facial expressions. She's fun. She's a fun character, and she's a fun character to learn things through. But yeah, this has always been one of the books where I've always been like, we have books at home that we have used for things like this, but I definitely like this being on my Berenstain Bears shelf. I don't consider it one of the, you know, bad books in the series.
Yeah.
And it doesn't teach, I'm going to go back to Learn About Strangers. It doesn't teach things that could actively harm a child to learn. So it's just, you know, it's a little outdated, as most books like this are, just because we've come a ways in the way we address it, things like this.
But having books for kids about like a topic like this and just have them be a normal part of your library that you can grab and read anytime. I mean, if that's a good conversation for your family, then great. Just don't stop where this book stops.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure to talk about this and to finally visit the Family Tree Clinic and be actually within these walls. This place means a lot to me as a parent and just as a person who needed to learn the importance of talking about this kind of thing with their kids. And now realizing that it's been a while and I probably should make sure we are continuing
circle
to talk
back
about things these things with their kids, and that it's not, and that I'm not just relying on her mother to have these conversations.
Absolutely.
With her. That it's something that men can discuss with their...
Papa Bear can talk about it,
yes,
too.
Yes, Papa Bear is allowed to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Or whoever, however you identify as a parent.
Absolutely. All parents.
All parents.
All the people who are part of your family network, your friend network, that have that kind of influential role with your kids can play a part.
And as you guys emphasized to us, you know, the more comfortable your child is talking about this using real terms, real medical terms for their bodies, for the things that, for their reproductive organs, for all of that, the more confident they'll be, the less vulnerable they'll be to, and we learned about this in Learn About Strangers, to predators, they'll be able to discuss any problems they have with their doctors in the future because they're using proper terminology. And they'll just be more confident people.
Absolutely.
And that, of course, ties into the whole bullying thing, and the more
it leads into all good health outcomes.
Yeah, it's just amazing how basic this education should be for everyone. So, well, I'm happy. thank you once again. And for anyone looking for me, I am at BerenstainBearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me on Twitter at BStainBearcast. Go to Patreon.com/DeepInBearCountry. You can throw a few dollars my way every month to help pay for these books, to help pay for equipment, upkeep, new mic stands. And don't forget, if you live in the Twin Cities or, I guess, Midwest area, depending on how far you want to travel, at the end of May, I will be doing a one-person show at Moon Palace Books in Minneapolis called Deep in Bear Country. Not an episode of this show, more a reflection on where I am as a parent, as a person, as a human being on this planet Earth who has been way too obsessed with the Berenstain Bears for the last 4 years, and how that sort of has affected my outlook on art, on creation, and on legacy, and on what we leave behind us when we are no longer part of this physical realm. So I'll be supplying more information as we go along, as we get closer, and as I develop the show. So if you're interested, end of May, and I'll give you more information later. Otherwise, I'll see you all next week with another book as we take further journeys deep in bear country.